After the movie Free Willy became a hit, word got out that the star of the film, a killer whale named Keiko, was sick and still living in a tiny pool in a Mexican amusement park. Fans were outraged. Kids demanded his release. I'm Daniel Alarcón. From Serial Productions and the New York Times comes The Good Whale, a story about the wildly ambitious science experiment to return Keiko to the ocean. Listen to new episodes on Thursdays. Want early access to the whole show? Subscribe to The Times at nytimes.com/podcasts to listen on Apple Podcasts and Spotify.
From the New York Times, I'm Sabrina Tavernisi. This is The Daily.
Алло, звонит Антон Троиновский, корреспондент газеты «Нью-Йорк Таймс».
Да, слушаю вас. Да.
Last weekend, my colleague Anton Troinovsky called a woman who lives in a small town above the Arctic Circle in northern Russia.
Да, спасибо, что позвонили. Возможность есть, но я бы хотела, наверное, остаться анонимной.
She told him she was in line at the pediatrician with sick kids when she first heard the news.
Работающая в суде, ей позвонила женщина, сына которого призывают.
The woman next to her got a phone call. Someone's son had just been drafted to go fight the war in Ukraine.
Ну, первая мысль, конечно, прям такой леденящий.
When she overheard that, she said, I felt like ice inside.
Было чувство, как будто вот мгла какая-то опустилась.
Like я даже не помню, some kind of darkness had fallen. Then she started hearing about other men.
И он мне сказал, что пришло письмо в организацию.
Her husband's business got a letter. Seven employees had to respond to the draft office.
Духового оркестра. Mm-hmm. Представьте, село маленькое.
The band director at a local school got the call.
Преподает. Ему 28 лет.
Then the draft came for her extended family.
Как раз это же компактное маленькое село. Все друг другу родственники. Забирает моего троюродного брата.
They're taking my second cousin. They're taking my first cousin.
Забирает племянника, брата
двоих. They're taking my nephew. She's worried that with winter coming, there won't be enough men to run the coal plant that heats people's homes or take care of the reindeer that her community depends on.
Mm-hmm. Я не понимаю логику.
She said she doesn't understand the logic of таking so many people from a place where there are so few. The draft that Russian President Vladimir Putin announced a week ago is disrupting lives all over Russia. Russians describe getting draft notices while they're at home and at work. Notices are even being forced into the hands of those arrested for protesting the war. Today, I talked to one man facing conscription about how his life has changed since the day the war came to Russia. It's Thursday, September 29th.
Okay. Tell me your name, just your first name, because I know the sensitivities, your age, and where you live.
Меня зовут Кирилл, мне 24 года, я живу в Подмосковье.
My name is Kirill, I'm 24, and I live in Moscow Oblast. So Kirill, going back to the beginning of the war, when Putin first ordered the invasion of Ukraine on February 24th, take me back to that moment in your life. What did you think when you saw that?
О, да-да-да, 24-го.
On the 24th, I woke up not very early, kind of like usual.
Да, проснулся около...
Around 11 o'clock in the morning.
Да, мой друг не спал всю ночь.
My friend in the morning said that war had begun.
Честно, он мне не очень запомнился, потому...
If I'm being honest with you, I don't actually remember that day very much because I didn't fully understand and comprehend the magnitude of what had happened and how horrible it would all be.
Наверное, мы...
I remember that I went home that day and began talking to my parents. I didn't really want to talk about it with my parents because I don't talk about political topics with them. We have very different points of view, and I like to avoid those things with them. The year before, I had gone to a protest against Putin. I hadn't understood until that moment how different we were and how different we had become. By the mere act of going to that protest, they saw me as someone who was against the policies of Putin, and that was true. Кирилл, did they support Putin? What were their views about him?
Они Путина не поддерживали, но в принципе они были.
So my parents didn't openly support Putin, but did believe what he was saying about the war.
Та публика, которая действительно может начать действовать.
My parents aren't exactly part of that really toxic part of the public that's really, really for this war, that, you know, puts Z stickers on the back of their car. They're not those people. It's hard for me to quite describe to you, but I will say that they are people who try very hard not to notice the lawlessness that is going on around them. And I came to them and said, the war is a catastrophe. There's no reason in the world that one country should attack another country. It just seemed so clear to me. And they said, what do you mean by war? Are you saying that they're lying to us and you're the one who knows the truth?
No.
Did you argue? Yes, we argued very badly. I love my parents. That's clear. We each set our position and never returned to the topic because we understood we just had different points of view.
Прошло какое-то время, естественно, первый.
So the time started going by, yes, and I basically turned into a person that was just constantly updating the news on my phone.
По факту, если честно, то.
The strange thing was there was a war. I could see it happening, but in the first 3 months, I didn't really feel it at all.
То есть, ну ничего вокруг не изменялось.
Nothing around me changed. The first thing I noticed was that the prices really started going up in the stores. I didn't have a very big salary, and I felt it a lot. The price of fruits, the price of vegetables were going up very sharply. I was seeing that some of the factories were closing, and a lot of the Western firms were leaving Russia. I was working in a company that was doing this cargo loading, and a lot of it was parts for airplanes. And there were firings. Big portion of our colleagues were transferred to a quote-unquote leave without pay. They were continuing to be held on the books, but there was no money, and really they were just all sitting at home without a job. I worked for another 2.5 months. I had started volunteering at a nonprofit that helped homeless people. And I heard that they actually had an opening for a paid position. I applied for the position and got it, and it was a slightly better paid, and it's the thing that's given me strength in these months. But if you talk about the quality of life, it didn't really change that much. I was in horror looking at this, but
ничего радикального, ничего сильно не изменилось.
There was really nothing radical at all. Nothing much changed.
То, что пугало больше всего, я уже часто.
And that is what was most disturbing for me. The contrast. A number of years ago, a very famous rock musician said this about the Chechen War. He said the most disturbing thing was being at the war and seeing the mud and the death. and getting on an airplane and flying back and landing in Moscow and seeing people walking around on the streets and children playing on jungle gyms and people shopping.
Он сказал, что в каком-то таком своем, что просто самое.
The most frightening thing is for people to have their lives keep going on and not feel the pain that is being caused in this other place. It really just didn't concern our lives. Were you ever worried that the war would come to you?
В прямом смысле нет.
In the most direct sense, no.
Да, если касалось, то я понимал, что коснется только косвенно.
If it was going to affect us, the war, it would really only be kind of tangentially, sort of on the sidelines, you know, that the prices had risen and my father was having problems at work because of the war. What were the problems your father was having because of the war?
Отец занимается тем, то, что он продает и чинит.
My father repairs and sells imported equipment for the milking of cows. And the sanctions really hit that. It was a firm that worked in Russia and it left. How did that affect your father's point of view about the war?
Никак. То есть,
not at all.
Повторял, что было и хуже, переживем.
He kept repeating that it was much worse in the 1990s, so we'll be fine, we'll survive.
Тогда жили, ну и сейчас переживем.
What did you think of that?
Ничего, думал, что... Мне было очень грустно. То есть я могу больше говорить, что я чувствовал. Мне было очень...
I was really sad.
Грустно, потому что эта логика...
Because I just didn't understand that logic.
Да, хочешь наоборот жить.
I wanted to live in a better way and not constantly be comparing ourselves to a worse way.
В лучшем, а не сравнивать себя со странами, которые живут еще хуже.
Where were you the moment that you heard about this so-called partial mobilization? It was 2 days ago. I woke up 15 minutes before my alarm clock, and I saw the news. I saw the news in the face of the president.
Для защиты нашей Родины, ее суверенитета и территории...
Да, и сразу значки в виде молнии, в том плане, что...
I saw the banner headline with little lightning bolts next to it that was telling me this was important, that he was announcing a partial mobilization.
Частичной мобилизации.
И так как разговоры о мобилизации...
And I understood that given... My health, my age, and my former military service, that I fit the criteria 100%. How did you feel in that moment? I guess I just felt this sense of resignation, kind of futility. Like, I was just going to go to work, but I was going to be called up in this draft. And go to war. What was the feeling in your heart?
Никакого.
None.
Я не чувствовал ни злости, ничего, просто...
I felt this emptiness, not anger, kind of almost nothing.
Просто думал о том, что делать дальше.
I just thought, what do I do next? Because I realized at that moment that the war had finally come to me. We'll be right back.
I'm Jonathan Swan. I'm a White House reporter for the New York Times. I have a pretty unsentimental view of what we do. Our job as reporters is to dig out information that powerful people don't want published, to take you into rooms that you would not otherwise have access to understand how some of the big decisions shaping our country are being made. And then, painstakingly, to go back and check with sources, check with public documents, make sure the information is correct. This is not something you can outsource to AI. There's no robot that can go and talk to someone who was in the situation room and find out what was really said. In order to get actually original information that's not public, that requires human sources, we actually need journalists to do that. So as you may have gathered from this long riff, I'm asking you to consider subscribing to the New York Times. Independent journalism is important, and without you, we simply can't do it.
Kirill, you talked about your military service. How long did you serve in the military?
Сейчас, начиная с 2009.
I was there for a year.
Даже находясь внутри, ну, когда уже служил,
I tried to maximally escape any mandatory military service.
Я поступил не в ВУЗ. Я поступил не в ВУЗ.
I didn't get into a university, I got into a technical school.
But после окончания колледжа,
when I graduated from my technical school, I was drafted and I didn't have money to buy my way out of it. The only people who really go to the army are the ones that can't buy their way out of it. I'm looking at a lot of the videos about the Russian soldiers who are captured in Ukraine, the Russian prisoners of war. And I tell you, 8 out of 10 of them say that they just went because it was the path of least resistance. They didn't have the money to buy their way out, and they didn't want to go to prison for 10 years. So they chose this.
Поэтому созданы просто все условия, чтобы...
It's not a choice to go off to defend the fatherland. It's about poverty and the desire to feed their families. So going back to when Putin first announced the mobilization, what did you start to do? What was the first thing? First, I started researching where I could go to get out, that wouldn't require a visa and wouldn't require a lot of money, because I don't have a lot of money. Physically, I started to feel bad. I had a really bad headache. I was very afraid. I'm not going to hide it from you. I was terrified. Then I just sat down, breathed in, caught my breath, and I went to work. I got there, and there were several other young men who were in the same category as me. We sat there and we were drinking coffee together and kind of laughing and just talking about it, and it felt better. We were talking about what was the information out there, who was going to try to leave, what we were going to try to do. What were they saying? We were just trying to find the logic in a very illogical decision. As the hours went by and I was texting with my friends and watching the news, it became very clear how many lies had been told. They said they wouldn't draft students, and we saw many students being called up. They said they wouldn't draft people who were in their 50s and 60s, and we saw many people in their 50s and 60s being called up. So it became clear that this was something that was really going to affect everybody. Then I began to feel really in danger, that they're going to come for me right now. And I saw, when the news had been announced about a partial mobilization, all of these people going out to protest. I wanted to go out to the protest, and it's clear that in Russia, of course, the protests don't influence or affect anything. But it was really the only true and honest thing I could have done at that moment. But I stayed home because I was very afraid that if they got me, if the police got me, that would lead to my drafting. How do you feel about that? I feel regret that I didn't go. I think it was wrong that I didn't go. I don't know. Why do you think it was wrong not to go to the protest?
Because I understood that I was just прячусь за спинами других людей, что...
Because I understood that I was just hiding behind the backs of other people.
Что я как будто бы оставлял эту не миссию, а не задачу.
It was as if I had just kind of abandoned the mission, as if I was saying, okay, young women, young men, you people not of drafting age, you go out and say your piece and say it on my behalf.
Ушибы. Синяки, травмы.
These people will be receiving bruises and wounds.
Ну, внутренне по-другому поступить достаточно тяжело.
But I think in retrospect, to sit at home and do nothing is actually harder than that.
Поступить по-другому, остаться дома, это тяжелее.
I feel like I'm dramatizing this. I don't want to be dramatizing this. Да, Кирилл.
Помимо того, что мне к вечеру сейчас очень сильно хочется спать, я себя чувствую отлично.
No. I don't want you to be thinking that I'm in some sort of terrible situation. It's just a lot of people are in this situation now.
Да, просто я сейчас в тепле, я достаточно хорошо себя чувствую.
I'm warm, I feel good, I'm in under a roof.
То, что чувствую я, это несоизмеримо с тем, то, что сейчас чувствуют люди где-то.
The thing that I'm feeling right now has nothing in comparison to the thing that people are feeling who are in the war. I don't want to have any comparison drawn there.
О своей повестке я услышал от отца, которому вечером...
So, 2 days after Putin's announcement, my father got a call.
Которому вечером...
A friend of his in the police station gave him a call.
И сказал, что...
And he said, there's a draft notice for your son tomorrow, for the next day.
Ее будет обязан вручить.
And that he was going to bring it over.
Да, это после этого...
I had this feeling of helplessness. I didn't know what to do.
Да, ее у меня нет, и...
And I've been at work for the past couple of days. You live at work now?
Сейчас, да.
Yes, I'm living at work.
Да.
You're sleeping there? You're brushing your teeth there? You're taking a shower there?
Да, здесь все для этого есть, потому что я работаю в благотворительной организации.
Yeah, actually, all of the above, and it's actually not that hard because I'm working in an organization that is for homeless people, so there's lots of creature comforts and things that we have for people around.
В том числе, да, то есть единственное, как я сейчас могу получить эту повестку.
I'm hiding here because I don't want to be in a place where people recognize me and people could come and give me this draft notice.
Скорее всего, нет.
The way that it has been working is that people are being given these things on the streets, at protests, when they come out of the metro, and this is something that I'm trying to avoid. So I've been here at work, and I don't think they will find me or get me if I don't go out. There were a few people in my company that met the criteria for the draft. We put a few plans together, which we're now trying to carry out. Our coworkers are trying to gather all of our documents and figure out from embassies and from different places where potentially we could go and get a visa to get out. I'm hugely grateful to them, but I understand that that variant is really unlikely, that it's basically not going to happen. So if that doesn't happen, and I don't think it will, then the second thing we're thinking of is to get to the border with Kazakhstan. And we're hoping that the border doesn't close. When would you go to Kazakhstan? So I'll probably be in this workspace that I've been in for the past couple of days until the 28th of September. But if I get a visa, there's still a danger because they're looking for people in the airports and they could be looking at my passport in the airport. So airports are not a safe place. In the train stations, they're checking people even less, and the least of all, the checking, is by car. Do you plan to go by car? Probably, yes. Сколько часов езды, Кирилл? Не знаешь, how far is it to the Kazakh border?
Да, сейчас буквально.
Right now, I'm looking. It's about a 20-hour drive. That's very far. But again, there's a complication. I don't have a car. So this would mean maybe finding a group that was going or asking someone to drive me to the border. So far, I don't have any options before me, but there are some options here. My father has a car. Maybe with him. Кирилл, would you ask your father? Would you ask your father to drive you to the border? I asked them to come see me on the weekend. It's probably going to be on Sunday. And I'm going to personally ask if they would be amenable to that option.
Вопросы, которые мне задают, очень рациональные.
They're having a hard time understanding the risks. They see only what is told on television, which is that young people won't be sent to the war. They'll first get some training. So it's hard for me to explain that I risk prison time and that I'm not going to go to this draft. What will you say to them? I'll tell them that I don't want to die purely for the reason of one person who's doing this completely senseless thing. I'll just explain in a very practical way, and I hope that we can find a common language.
Да, потому что для них я уверен, что я дороже, чем какие-то принципы именно военные. То есть моя безопасность важнее, чем какая-то победа моей ценой.
I think for them I'm more valuable than some type of abstract idea about the war or victory. They love you.
Да.
What do you think that they'll say back to you?
Скорее всего, они будут ретранслировать то же, что они услышали по телевизору, что никто из новобранцев, скорее всего, что меня...
They'll probably be translating all of the things that they're hearing on television, that this won't really concern you, it won't reach you, it'll be okay. Maybe we should just go out to the country for a while.
Просто чувство отца и матери к ребенку. Я это все понимаю, но при этом я понимаю, что сейчас я буду.
I'll just be coming from how I see the situation. And I'll ask them for help. And if they refuse, then I'm gonna find a way to get to the border. Кирилл, if your parents do refuse or simply say back what they're seeing on television, is that painful to you? That you might not be able to find a common language, even when it's about your own life?
Нет, это ни разу меня не расстроит, потому что я понимаю, что...
No, it's not painful.
Если бы, опять же, это не потому, что там я их люблю, еще почему-то.
If I had also been steeped in the propaganda for so many years that we have external enemies, that we need to be vigilant, I think I would probably have the same view. If you don't make it to Kazakhstan, what will happen? Well, it depends on if they stop me. If that happens, then I'm going to have to hide somewhere inside the borders of Russia. Кирилл, when you think about going to war on behalf of Russia, wearing a Russian uniform in Ukraine, when you think about having to do that, how does that make you feel?
Ну как, это действительно самая страшная мысль, которая приходит. Я буду сразу, я уверен, что точно туда не попаду. Я уже представлял, что...
That's the most terrifying thought of all.
Уже представлял, что лучше действительно отсидеть, чем...
I've already decided that it's better to go to jail than to go off to that absolutely insane and senseless war. Why is it such a terrifying thought for you, being in Ukraine in a Russian uniform?
Потому что эта война абсолютно безумная. Эта война никому не нужна, кроме людей, которые ее начали. То есть оказаться, в принципе, в этом месте, и опять же...
It's not even about the fear of being killed, but of killing someone.
Я просто даже не представляю. Это просто ужас.
It's horror. Как ты?
Да, я сейчас абсолютно нормально, просто немножко не так много спал и немножко не очень хорошо сейчас думается. Пожалуйста, направь еще раз, о чем мы говорили.
I said, how are you doing? He said, I'm okay, I just didn't sleep very much and I'm not thinking very well right now. Oh my goodness, Кирилл.
Горизонт планирования — это 2-3 недели. То есть, но все равно планировал куда-то сходить, как-то развлечься.
I had these plans. I had plans for a vacation, I had plans to read, I had plans for the next couple of weeks, and now I'm just constantly obsessively watching the news and trying to figure out how to get to the Kazakh border.
Опять же, странно.
Strange that I had these plans.
Очень смешанные, да, очень смешанные чувства, потому что хочется...
It's остаться. A very strange feeling, kind of a funny feeling almost for me now, because I feel at home here, and I feel happy here in this job. I myself am not very outgoing, and they've really made friends with me, and I want to stay.
Тяжело, вот не могу просто сказать, из-за чего это...
I can't really describe it. I can just concentrate on the one thing I know, that I have to leave this place and that I have to leave the closest people to me in my life. But
it
feels like it's just going to be a long weekend, that I'm going to go away and then I'm going to come back and I'll be right back here at the homeless shelter talking with the residents. Thank you.
Привет, Сабрин. Сделал небольшую паузу. Это звуки одного из московских автовокзалов.
2 days after our conversation, Kirill texts me. He says he's heard the borders might be closing soon, and he needs to leave now. So he packs a small bag, his flashlight, his headphones, his favorite t-shirts. He buys some Snickers and some bottles of water for the road. His father can't drive him, so Kirill decides to take the bus with a friend. They ride through the night. When they reach the border with Kazakhstan, they find a line of cars waiting to cross that stretches for 10 kilometers. So Kirill and his friend find a checkpoint where they can cross on foot. He texts me a picture of the crowd. Thousands of people are waiting. Many of them are young men in sweatshirts, their hoods drawn against the cold. He records a video of a border guard taunting the crowd, insulting them for trying to leave Russia. And then he stops texting. For almost 20 hours, I don't hear anything. Then, on Wednesday night, I get a message. Sabrina, hello. Everything is good. I crossed the border. A few of the guys who were with me were not allowed to leave. I so far don't have a local phone, almost no internet. And for now, I'm answering only my loved ones and my friends. Since Putin announced the draft a week ago, an estimated 200,000 Russians have fled the country. We'll be right back. Here's what else you should know today.
I am in Key West, Florida. I am at the intersection of Eisenhower Drive and Truman Avenue, which you can tell from the roaring sounds of waves is now underwater.
Hurricane Ian made landfall over Florida on Wednesday as a severe Category 4 storm. It unleashed 150-mile-per-hour winds and 12-foot storm surges that submerged cars, knocked over houses, and left more than 1 million residents without power, from Fort Myers to Key West, where my colleague Francis Robles documented the flooding.
It's interesting because this area was actually dry an hour or 2 hours ago when I came out earlier, and the authorities keep saying that even though Hurricane Ian passed during the night, that the worst of the storm surge was going to come afterwards, that it was going to come today, that it's going to come tomorrow, and maybe even Friday. And lo and behold, exactly what they said was going to happen is what happened.
So the greatest damage seemed to occur on Florida's southwest coast, off the Gulf of Mexico, where videos showed entire neighborhoods underwater.
Now, it is our meteorologist's view that the storm surge has likely peaked and will likely be less in the coming hours than it has been up to this point.
During a news conference, Florida Governor Ron DeSantis said that the worst appeared to be over, but that Ian would still go down as one of the strongest hurricanes to ever hit the state.
But the fact is, there's going to be damage throughout the whole state, and people in other parts of the state, be prepared for some impacts. And you are.
The storm is now expected to move north and inland to cities like Orlando. Today's episode was produced by Lindsay Garrison and Will Reed. It was edited by Michael Benoit. Contains original music by Alicia Beitoub, Dan Powell, and Marion Lozano, and was engineered by Chris Wood. Our theme music is by Jim Brunberg and Ben Landsverk of Wonderly. Special thanks to Valerie Hopkins and Anton Trinovsky. That's it for The Daily. I'm Sabrina Tavernisi. We'll see you tomorrow.